The following talk was given at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on May 11, 2025. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Morning, everyone. Good to see you today. Happy Mother's Day, of course. This morning I thankfully remembered it was Mother's Day, and before Megan went off to work, I was able to thank her for being such a great mother, and of course text my own mother and my aunt and stuff like that. But I'm a little slow sometimes, and so it didn't dawn on me apparently until too late that I was giving a talk today, although I knew when I was first asked to give a talk today that was going to be on Mother's Day, but it kind of slipped my mind or whatever. So in thinking about that, I probably would have changed the direction of the talk today, you know. But I had a chance to mull this over a little bit in gratitude for my partner, Megan. And parental mind came to my mind. And I had a chance to briefly look back at, there's three minds that I believe was Uchiyama. I remember talking about this, but there's parental mind, joyful mind, and magnanimous mind. And this parental mind is basically the spirit of motherhood or fatherhood, and taking care of things, unconditionally, you know. And I was reflecting about how good of a mom Megan is, my partner, right? And I just wanted to share a little story about when we first started dating, how I kind of knew at this point that, you know, maybe this would be work out long term. My father was going through a very difficult time in his life when we first started dating, actually. And he, you know, was going through a lot of troubles and ended up being basically, alone, you know, and living in this trailer up in northern Minnesota. And he was all on his own. He didn't have anybody to turn to for help, except for me. I was living in the cities though, you know, so he was kind of alone and didn't have anybody to turn to. Well, he needed to move from his current environment. Bunch of different circumstances kind of, it was not an option. He had to move. Okay. And, I have siblings, but they're step siblings, and there was broken, you know, kind of strained relationships there. And so it was just me basically that was available to help him move. And of course I was going to have to take time off of work and go up to northern Minnesota and, you know, just make this happen, you know? And I remember Megan and I had just first started dating when this happened, you know, and of course I'm not going to ask somebody who I just started dating to come and help me move my father. You know what I mean? There's kind of a, some different, you know, things with that. It's just kind of a, maybe embarrassing, or I can't think of the right word. But I just never would have done that. You know, and this came up in the course of our conversation, and she without hesitation was just like, I'm going to come up there and help you. You know, I'm going to come up there and help your dad move. She didn't know my dad. She never met him before, actually. This is the first time she was going to meet him. So she without hesitation, took time off of work, came up north with me, and moved all of this stuff, helped me pack all of his belongings, and get him moved from point A to point B. And just without hesitation, just did this without question, you know? And it was just a moment where, and I'll share a little bit about this as I go through my talk today. I don't know that I would have done that. you know, I'm kind of selfish in a lot of ways. And it doesn't automatically come to my mind to just automatically do something like that. With her, it's without hesitation. And it's not just that, you know, this is a one-time thing. This is just who she is as a person. And she's a nurse, and just without hesitation, does things for people, you know. And so this is an example of her, but I'm positive that mothers are out there of the same quality, you know? And so I just want to thank you for all the mothers out there. We couldn't do it without you, literally, you know? There's a lot more I could say about that, but I got to get into a different part today. So anyway, the talk that I structured today was based out of a book that I just came across recently, and that's The Roots of Goodness, basically by Uchiyama and Dogen. And so I haven't had the opportunity to read a book by Uchiyama, like a new book by Uchiyama before, but for quite a while now. And so I was pretty enthusiastically, you know, reading this book, although I only made it through the first part of the book. Because much in like the style of Uchiyama and his teachings are presented, it just struck me, you know, it very, very good teachings. So there's just a beginning introduction of the book that I'm going to go get into today. And to be honest with you, I haven't read the whole book yet, but I do look forward to doing that. So the title of the talk today is Dine In, A True Adult. And first part that I'm going to talk about here is a story that Uchiyama presented in this introduction. While he was living at on Taiji Zen Monastery in Japan, he was asked to provide one word of advice to somebody's son. And I believe it was like a educator, like a teacher, professor that came to the monastery to visit, and he brought his son with him. And so this person had asked Uchiyama to provide his son with some guidance, maybe just a brief little sentence or phrase or something that would stick with and help his son out throughout his life. And at the time, Uchiyama was like, I don't know what to say. You know, he said he's not very good at these little sayings to help people out and stuff like that, but that I was stuck with him for like 10 or 15 years. His mind went back to this, and he thought to himself, what could I have said that would have really helped this young person out? Cause he wanted to, he just didn't know what to say, what would be helpful. And so after a long time, he finally, in this book, conveys what he would have said. And he would have said, as you grow up, strive hard to become a true adult. Now, when we initially think of that, we think, well, becoming an adult is what, like getting your driver's license and being able, you know, being 18, being able to do whatever comes with that, turning 21 and being able to drink alcohol, like these milestones that you reach. Where it's becoming an adult, you know. Well, obviously this is, everybody in this room knows that isn't where he's going with this, obviously, you know. But strive hard to be a true adult. And so Uchiyama goes on to say that in Buddhism, our most fundamental objective is to grow up to be and act as true adults, or to use Dogen's word, dine in. This is the essential crux of Buddha's teaching. And just hearing it worded that way, for some reason really resonated with me, you know. And so when we think of Buddhist teachings, we go to the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, we go to all these structured teachings, right? But here it's becoming a true adult, you know. And with that, I just immediately thought of Norm Randolph, obviously. The reason that resonated with me is because, you know, it's who, like what does it mean to be a true adult? Can we even put that into words? Is it even possible to put that, put something out there, some structure to become a true adult? You know, but it does sum up. It seems to sum up the teachings. And so, of course, this doesn't mean, like in our everyday use of the word adult, to become that you grow up and become something different. You know, it's not becoming something other than what you actually are. And I just want to recognize that there are different ways to translate dine in. Obviously, that's Katagiri's name that he was given, his Dharma name. And so it also means one who exhibits patience and forbearance, or great patience. But for today's talk, we're going to stick with true adult. So we're all convinced that we are adults. But if we're honest, we're just a bunch of hungry ghosts, is what Uchiyama says. And I just want to recognize up front here also that some of the ways that Uchiyama and his teacher was Sawaki Roshi, you know, there's a style of teaching there that I really enjoy, which is just like to cut through the nonsense and just say it, you know, just say what it is, in a way that can come across as kind of crude, I think. And so I wasn't comfortable actually sharing some of what was said in this book, and the way that it was said. Although I do really appreciate that style. And so Hungry Go symbolizes a state of intense craving, that can't be satisfied. And so it's often depicted as, beings with like a really small neck and big bellies. And so they're not able, no matter how much food or how much they ingest, they're not able to satisfy that desire, that craving, to eat. And so this image, actually, even when I first encountered it, really resonated with me. I'm in recovery from it for addiction. I've shared that a number of times. But I was sitting in an AA meeting one time, and there was a phrase that somebody said that just really resonated with me. And this guy said he when he knew he was an alcoholic was when he walked into a warehouse full of alcohol, you know, 12 pack, you know, 24 packs of beer all over the place, other kinds of liquor. And he just said, I knew at that moment that there was not enough alcohol in that warehouse to satisfy my desire. You know, so it's just this insatiable, unquenchable, you know, thirst to ingest more and to get more. And that certainly resonated with me because, to be honest with you, I felt the same way. There's no amount of substances in the world that's going to satisfy this unquenchable thirst that I had when I put substances in my body. You know, we live in a consumer society, you know, which is we're sold things. You know, we buy, we're constantly sold this idea that we don't have enough. You know, this is very effective in marketing, in advertising. I mean, that's basically what advertising is. You know. And we see billboards and advertisements all over the place of how we need this in order to be happy. We need this in order to satisfy that thing, you know. As has been pointed out here before, what if we only wanted what we need, you know? What if that were the case, that we only wanted what it was that we need? In a way, wouldn't that solve a lot of problems, you know? How much stuff do we need in order to survive? How much stuff do we need in order to, I suppose, be happy, you know? And it seems to never be enough. We basically live out of this confusion. And so Dogen's chapter, or fascicle, The Eight Understandings of the Great Person, opens with all the various Buddhas are great people. And Uchiyama says that from that statement, we can realize that we ourselves are not yet adults, but still children. And in that sense, I often feel like a child, you know, and I have a daughter now, as all of you know. But it's interesting to me watching her, particularly when she wants something. You know, it's like she's on this popsicle bender lately where she just wants to have popsicles all the time. She wakes up in the morning, she wants a popsicle. You know what I mean? And she just wants these pop, like I cannot believe how many popsicles this child can eat. You know, and to be honest with you, I know there's a different style of parenting out there. I have my good friend of mine does things the opposite way, but I don't do too much to limit that. You know, I talked to my sister about this, and she's of the mind of like, if you limit it, you know, they're just going to do it later on when they can get access to it. You know, so hopefully they get burnt out on it and they just switch their eating styles. You know, I don't not limit it at all. I do so, you know, I somewhat, but I, you know, if she wants a popsicle and she wakes up in the morning, I give her a popsicle, you know. I also try to offer her some other things, which she often does do. So she doesn't just eat popsicles, but that desire that she wants the popsicle, to the point where I get up in the morning. I have to take her to daycare. You know, I have to go to work. You know, there's things that need to be done. She doesn't care. She could care less whether she has to get dressed or brush her teeth or, you know, nothing else in the world matters except for that popsicle, you know? And I can identify with that. You know, I can identify with, everything else gets clouded out except for that one thing that I want at that moment in time. Now, obviously we know, they change. You know, I don't want the same things I wanted when I was 16 years old. But this is what we do. We go from one thing to the next of this is what I need right now in order to satisfy me, you know? And it's insatiable. It doesn't end. This like, aching of the heart is what it's been referred to here as. And so if we could just, you know, live with what we need instead of what we want, you know, another thing that I've been trying to work on over the years, and this is more getting into my actual, in a relative sense, adult life, where some of that stuff I can be okay if I don't get a popsicle right now. I can be okay with not getting, some of those things, at this point. But I still have that sort of same similar mindset where it's like, if I'm reading a book, for example, and there's something else going on, it's kind of a challenge to go from the thing that I'm doing that I'm enjoying to something else that seems to be like a chore. You know, there's like these transitions that happen, going from sleeping at night, to waking up to the alarm, you know. So there's these transitions that happen and we select which one of those activities or which of those activities we enjoy, which ones we don't. And these transitions, I noticed early on in my practice that seemed to be challenging going from this thing to that thing, you know? And so just being aware, you know, of that basically, of that tendency to want, you know, that desire. And obviously the waking up in the morning, is a big one for a lot of people. I don't know why, but about 10, 15 years ago now, I heard Steve Hagen talking about waking up in the morning and getting up at the alarm, you know. And for a while in my life, I used the snooze alarm, you know. And I talked to a lot of patients who struggle with waking up in the morning. But it's that moment of like transition. Just when you hear the bell, get up. Go on to the next activity. Just wake up. As soon as we find ourselves playing with that, how much we want to sleep, you know, it's like we suffer. We suffer as a result of that. So Uchiyama goes on, just like little kids in kindergarten, we run around whining. I want this or I want that. The only thing that changes is that we get older. Instead of toys and candy, we want more money and prestige. And so people, this is Uchiyama, this is one of those quotes that I was able to use because it's not quite as, you know, that bad, but it's good, it's good. So people run around with smug faces, guys grow beards, smoke cigarettes, and drink all the alcohol they can, pay the adult fare for riding a train or going to the public bath and thinking highly of themselves. What the heck? You're still a bunch of kids, or worse, a bunch of hungry ghosts. That's what Dogen is trying to tell us. You know, and I think Norm used to do this thing where he'd go like this, you know, like, thinking we're, you know, important. And so that's a big thing for us, is especially as adults in society, is wanting to be something important. I want to matter. You know, I want to leave behind a legacy. I want people to respect me, you know. And so we change from popsicles, you know, to wanting this stellar reputation. We want money. We want the prestige. I know that early on in my recovery, this became very evident to me that this is basically what I was doing. You know, is that I was chasing this level of self-importance and just really being confused by that. And what I noticed, is that this seemed to be, maybe a lot of this was projection, but it seemed to be that that's a lot of what our society is based on, you know, is like people chasing these levels of importance in order to get to a certain status, you know. And I very much was caught up in that, of trying to have this identity that was respected. And I know a lot of people in recovery struggle with this, struggle with their sense of self, with their identity. I liken this to, I wanted to be a famous musician without ever playing a guitar. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to learn how to put in the effort to actually get there. I just wanted the fame. You know what I mean? And so, but there was a phrase that I heard in recovery that's always resonated with me. At the same time that I wanted that, I also felt inferior, you know? And so, an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. And that just always resonated with me because it's like, yeah, I put on this front of being, somebody, being important, but at the same time feeling, you know, not so good about myself, you know? my sponsor used to say, when you're feeling, you know, big or you're feeling important, just pat yourself on the head, you know? And sort of a way of just cool that out a little bit. But there's a different way to live besides this chasing, some identity or some status or money. And that's what Uchiyama is pointing to here. So he brings out, like I said at the beginning, several examples that I won't go into today, but I really appreciate if you get a chance to read it, we can talk about it. But that's what we do, you know? So what we value comes to define our history. He uses some examples here. Sales people bowing to customers are really bowing to money. So he had this example where he would notice that these shop owners would bow down to customers when they would come in. And what he noticed is that it didn't seem like they were really bowing to the customer. They were really bowing to what the customer could potentially give them. And for many young people, looking sharp is cool and seems to be of ultimate value. Or growing long hair and a beard, riding a motorcycle. And in the end, he points out to look good or feel cool, you've got to have money. And then he says, so people's brains get short-circuited and they end up trying to rob a bank or whatever. So I appreciated that. There's also getting into a top-tier school or working for a large company versus like a third-tier school or a small company. And this is what we do. This is how we play with this. Is like we want that thing that seems better, you know, and money is always a part of that, usually a part of that equation. If we have the money, we can get into the better school. You know how it works. I don't need to go on. I remember being, when I was in school, I'm going to have to cut this short like in half. I didn't realize I actually thought I was going to have, not enough to share, but sorry guys, you're only going to get half the talk today. So I remember, when I was fortunate enough to go to school, higher education, I went to Augsburg University and I was a McNair scholar, meaning that I was one of the, I was the first person in my family that, got a college degree. And so I was in college and what it was preparation for graduate school. And so they allowed me to do this big research study, which I actually did here at Dharma Field. But I got to do this study and it was preparation for graduate school. I could also use it to apply for different schools. They would help with the process, even help with some of the funding with that process. And I took a class. Her name was Dr. Pike. She was a professor of sociology and she was teaching us the basics of something of higher education or something like that. And she said something that just always resonated with me. She said, basically people go to school to get the paycheck. They want the degree. They want to get their degree stamped. Then they want to get the job and they want the paycheck. So it's just that process of going to school. They don't really care about the education. They just want what's after the education in order to get a paycheck. And she's like, there's a different way to do this. You know, there's learning for the sake of learning, you know. So we had this opportunity to be in school, to be in higher education, which isn't available to everybody, You know, so this was a real opportunity. And what she was saying is to, you know, learn to learn, you know, appreciate the information that you're learning instead of just trying to go through this and cross the T's and dot the I's to get that. All right, you guys, I really need to step it up here. So he goes through, high class people working for the benefit of society. People will donate money, you know, to India when, there's incredibly rich people living there. He provides several different examples of how we do things. But it's confused. You know, he makes a statement that, where is it? That's later on. Basically that we're confused in the way that we approach this, you know, and there's a different way. And ultimately, if we had the ultimate value of becoming a true adult, maybe some of this confusion would clear up. oh man, I don't know what to do here. I have some good stuff that I wanted to share with you guys. Let's see. Let me just take you through this, okay? Uchiyama talks about this person named Takuro when he was living in the monastery. And Takuro, he couldn't help but feel that he was a true human being. He was missing a tooth. He wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer, but he had truly good character. The only thing he was lacking was the guile to deceive people, you know? So he talks about, you know, people thought Takuro was mentally disabled. He makes a statement that if I think too many of us normal people spend too much of our time trying to be tricky and deceptive, trying to manage our reputations and all that kind of stuff. So why is it that devils like us go around giving a helping hand to saint like people like Takuro? So kind of flipping it around, you know, instead of us taking, you know, feeling bad and taking care of people like Takuro. You know, why aren't they helping us not be confused, basically? We spend all this time, you know, and effort on things that don't really, I want to say matter, but we're just confused, basically. So I'm going to close with this. The opening line of, hold on. Let me get my bearing here. The opening line of the eight understandings of the great person. So this is the fascicle by Dogen. So the opening line is all the various Buddhas are great people. Means that for human beings, becoming a true adult is of ultimate value. I think it's very important to firmly decide on this ultimate value. And there's two different words here, phrases. Gosho no Banku. This is people continually living from one want to the next, motivated only by greed or unwholesome habits from the past. This is basically being a child, you know, just one want to the next want. Then there's Saigen no Bosatsu, a person that lives by a vow, a bodhisattva or true adult. And this is to go beyond this limited way of living. And being an adult basically is not being tossed about by this or that. We get really pulled in. We get sucked into the appearances, and that's where our motivation genuinely lies, is just chasing after wants, you know. And instead, what Uchiyama was pointing out here is, what if our motivation was to become a true adult, to not be confused, to live out of awakening, to live out of true understanding, to live out of capital T truth. Living out of this is the most important thing. This is of highest value. And that's being a true adult instead of being caught by this or that. Having our motivations be this, just this. Come back to just this here and now. That's our motivation, to be a true adult. And not, when you notice, when you see, and this is why I brought up Norm earlier, when you see a true adult, you know, you can see that there's not this confusion. They're not easily tossed away by the politics. I was going to go into some political stuff today. We skipped that though. You know, we have a lot of confusion going. you know, a lot of conflicting motivations. And basically what Uchiyama is saying is, what if we were able to just live as a true adult? And that was our motivation. Thanks for your time today. I'm sorry. Obviously, I didn't time this out right. Questions or comments?
Thank you. I think you brought up a lot of kind of rich ideas, even in the little bit that you got to today, so much that I kind of have two comments, actually. The first one was that I was really struck by the story you told about the man walking into the warehouse and, you know, seeing all of that abundance made him realize he was an alcoholic. And I was just, that's so striking that I kind of had to stop for a moment and think, it's like, you know, I'm not an alcoholic, but is there, you know, other times in my life that I might encounter abundance myself and am struck by that? And I was thinking, you know, when I'm hungry in the afternoon and I want a snack and I go up to my fridge and I open it and nothing that is in front of me is appealing to me, whether it's, you know, perfectly good snack food or maybe I just genuinely don't have good food at the moment. But yeah, so even though that was a very, you know, extreme example, and maybe not extreme, but just very striking, you know, I think it's a good reminder that that sort of being confronted by abundance and having that abundance kind of showing craving is really powerful. And the second thing that really struck me was when you were talking about your professor and about going to school, going for the degree and just going for the paycheck. Especially with higher education, I think we have a lot of ideas of what that degree means. Above my desk at home, I have a little sign that I bought a number of years ago that says, you know, I thought I wanted a career. Turns out I just wanted a paycheck. And, you know, at the time when I bought it, I, you know, wasn't thinking of like craving or that sort of thing, but kind of paradoxically, I have it to remind myself to, you know, when I'm working and that sort of thing, to not take myself too seriously, that I am working for a paycheck, you know, just do the work as it comes up. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Anything else? Again, happy Mother's Day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.